The Guardian.
Hello, everybody. My name's Max. This is Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Today, Wayne Rooney. He's either the best or worst England player ever. We'll work that out. Liverpool cruise and Celtic wobble into the Champions League group stages. Diving foul throws in a £15,000 tunnel club at the Etihad. And 4am Carabao Cup draws, a Premier League preview, your questions, and an erudite panel to take you through all of it. And that is Guardian Football Weekly Extra. Thanks for choosing us. We have a panel. Philippe Auclair. Good morning.
Good morning, Maxime.
We're in a rush because once again you're going off to commentate on rally driving.
Yes,
aren't you?
Correct.
Which rally
are
you doing?
I think it's Rally Deutschland.
Okay. But you still can't.
But I'm not too sure, but cars are involved.
But you still can't drive?
I still can't drive.
Okay. But I found out earlier you can drive a tractor.
I can drive a tractor, yes, okay. But not an automatic tractor. I want to shift the gears, you know, with those huge levers. That's good fun.
Who doesn't?
Sweden's Marcus Christensen is here.
Good morning.
Senior management.
Well, some say so, some don't. Well,
you're sort of, you're football editors.
Yes,
that's
correct.
So is that sort of assistant, is that like having Sammy Lee in the studio, sort of applauding along?
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think Marcus probably thinks himself more being a kind of Joachim Löw next to Jürgen Klinsmann.
Okay.
No.
Or Sven is a more relaxed kind of overseer of things.
Right. Not a Tord Grip.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Okay.
Ireland's Paul Doyle. First pod since January 2016.
Hi.
Have you had a nice... And the first time we've ever met as well.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Nice to meet you.
You're not as bad as they say.
Although, I did get some criticism below the line, which I really enjoy, for breathing in the last pod. Oh, so I would like to apologise to anyone offended. I'll do my absolute best not to breathe in the next... How long until the rally driving, Philippe?
45 minutes,
okay.
My dear.
Look, if I do breathe, I'd like to apologise. Should we start with some actual football? Liverpool-Hoffenheim. Philippe, what did you think of this one?
Crazily open, very entertaining. Didn't tell us anything that we, I think, didn't know already about either team. I've been a bit surprised by the criticism that Hoffenheim got from, and its young manager in particular, got for being so gung-ho and... But they had to score three goals, didn't they, to qualify? So they had to take risks. They took risks. And against a team which is ideally equipped to deal with team taking risks, we didn't pay. And I don't think it told us an awful lot about either Liverpool or Hoffenheim that we didn't know from the first leg. But, of course, everybody will say it's the first time five English teams now are in the Champions League. And they will even say six British teams, because Celtic is also there.
So, first time there'll be six British teams in the Europa League in February. So that's exciting, isn't it? The third goal was beautiful, though, Marcus, wasn't it?
Yes, I thought the overall performance of Firmino especially was outstanding. He is such a good player. And like someone wrote this morning, he doesn't mind doing the simple thing as well. He is so effective. He can do the difficult stuff, but sometimes he just does the simple things. And he's so good on the ball and a bit underrated, I think, still. Mm-hmm. Here, and obviously with Coutinho out with flu or back problem or whatever the latest is, he has really showed that he is maybe as important, if not more important, for Liverpool.
Would you go with that, Paul?
Firmino more important than Coutinho?
Mm.
Well, I think Coutinho is dispensable insofar... Well, I say that, but that's provided you have faith on Liverpool being able to spend whatever money they recoup on him wisely or at all. And I don't actually have that faith. So I think they should keep Coutinho.
They're still fallible at the back, though. I mean, that's, you say that, Philippe.
Yes.
We knew that before, and we still see that now.
I mean, how many chances did Gnabry have? I mean, it was... they had, I would say, half a dozen clear chances... So yes, they still look really frail at the back. You would imagine that should Coutinho go, nobody really knows what's going to happen, to be honest now. I think obviously the priority is they're probably going to go back to Van Dijk and to try and sort something out as quickly as they possibly can.
That doesn't surely hinge on Coutinho going. I mean,
they made the
original approach before there was any suggestion of Coutinho leaving. They have the money to get him. They just made a balls of it.
Yeah.
Can they go back again? What's the latest? They had to apologise and crawl
look
back.
It doesn't look likely, does it?
He's got to go somewhere, though. Can you imagine Van Dijk staying after what happened?
Probably not. And they signed Wesley Hout for £50 million, wasn't it? And they say it's not a Van Dijk replacement, but my feeling is they probably will leave.
How well does anyone think Liverpool can do in the Champions League itself?
It was my guess, completely uninformed guess. And
you're always informed.
Before the beginning of the season was that in the league, they're going to struggle. They won't make the top four. They will scrape through in the group phase and they will do one great thing in the Champions League, then we'll go out. That was the way I was seeing one coup d'éclat, I would say, in the Champions League. They're perfectly capable of really, really annoying a very big team on their day, but no, honestly. The team is not balanced enough to go an awful long way.
No, but if they do address that in the remainder of the transfer market by getting Van Dijk or another centre back and a linchpin in central midfield, then they are capable of going quite far and doing good things, because but on their day they can beat anyone.
They will still have the recurrent problem which they had last year, which is they do spend a lot of energy on the field. Mm-hmm. They have to. Their squad is not the biggest that they have, certainly in terms of quality. Would you say they have 14, 15 players whom you say are genuinely competing for a place in the first 11 at the moment? Not many more than that. And that having, you know, the Champions League to play like Liverpool plays it, which is full tilt, this surely is going to prove a little bit too much. Unless, as you say, you know, we've still got a few days, a week now?
Mm-hmm.
A week, yeah. Exactly,
as
isn't it?
Jurgen Klopp did suggest last night that some of the targets were waiting to see whether they get into the Champions League or not.
Yes.
So maybe there's some things that are on the verge of being done.
Mm-hmm.
Celtic lost 4-3 at Astana. They won 8-4 on aggregate. Napoli threw 4-0 on aggregate against Nice.
Yeah.
Is that a surprise, Philippe?
No, it's not a surprise at all. I mean, if you're talking about Celtic, I don't think it's much of a surprise after the first leg. It's not either a surprise to see Astana doing well at home. Everybody knows they've beaten Bayern at home and all these sort of things. And there will be a tough ask, by the way, in the Europa League. Not exactly a nice place to go and play. When it comes to Nice, it's a real, real disappointment. It was expected after what happened in the first leg. But the manner of the defeat at the Allianz Riviera is really will leave quite a sour taste after all we hoped. And I would say half expected from them. We thought they'd done, in a way, the most difficult with those extraordinary performances against Ajax. Extraordinary scenario rather than performances. I think Napoli, yeah, okay, probably the toughest draw they could have got. But the displays were really not good at all. Balotelli was absolutely appalling. And as Lucien Favre reminded the press at length, it was, you know, Balotelli still managed to be off the field when Napoli opened the scoring because he'd forgotten to wrap a piece of jewellery that he was wearing, and which is, you know, simply unforgivable. He was not the only one. Some other players got some really sharp criticism from Lucien Favre. And I think the question now is, well, there are two questions. One, how did it go down so quickly? And the answer Lucien Favre has is that we haven't planned for the new season, despite recruiting Wesley Snyder, despite extending or giving Balotelli another year's contract.
They didn't know when the season was starting, did they?
I think so. I think so. But it's quite sad to see one of the great stories of last year's Liga, you know, unraveling like this. And, you know, we were talking before the show, and I said that I wouldn't be surprised if there were another pretty big name on the market as far as managers go in the not too distant future.
What's your opinion of Jean-Michel Seri, who didn't play well? Played so badly.
I think his head is is not right at the moment, which is understandable when you've got, you know, Xavi saying these things about you.
Yeah.
When you've got Barcelona, you've got other clubs as well now. I mean, I think he's been looked at. Everybody knows that, especially with his release clause, he could be one of the transfers of the summer.
Well, he'd be good at Liverpool, for example.
He'd be good at Liverpool. He'd be fantastic at Arsenal. That's what in France everybody's been saying. As soon as he's you know, appeared and revealed himself, is an ideal, you know, fit for Arsenal. He's got bags of talent. He's very young. And so I think this bad performance will be easily forgiven due to the circumstances.
Now, the draw for the Champions League is at 5 o'clock today. In the after we've recorded this pod, before you've listened to this pod stage, does anybody want, therefore, to hear possible dream nightmare draws for teams that will be irrelevant by the time people listen to this?
Have you got the hats?
Spurs and Liverpool could get Real Madrid, PSG and Roma. Or they could get Bayern, Barcelona and Roma. Dream draw for them could be Spartak Moscow, Porto and FC Salzburg. Chelsea, a
but
nightmare
that's not
group.
Really a dream draw.
Say again.
That's not a dream. Nobody qualifies for the Champions League to play matches like that. That's not what you want.
Depends what you. My dream is to go to Spartak. So that's.
Really?
I don't know, actually. What is my dream? My dream really is for my future wife to wake up and say, "I don't want to emigrate. I'm really happy here." That would really make my life much easier.
Going?
She's going to Australia, and sometimes she says, "My children will never see England." But I don't tell employers that because, you know, long term, that might impact on what they think.
I think you just said, you just told everybody. No?
Well, yeah. nightmare for Chelsea, Barcelona, Napoli, Feyenoord or Celtic. Possible dream, Paul. Is this a dream for you? Porto, Anderlecht and Salzburg again.
Oh, well, Porto for Anderlecht and Salzburg. At least for the fans, it's decent trips.
Yeah. Porto's beautiful.
Oh, gosh, yes. Salzburg is magnificent.
Nightmares for Manchester United and Man City. Real Madrid, Napoli, Feyenoord or Celtic. Dream for Manchester United or City. Spartak Moscow, Anderlecht and Salzburg. I mean, I just cut and pasted this off the internet, but I, you know. Marcus.
Yes.
Here's some questions. Housemaster says, which English side will go furthest in the Champions League? Depends on the group is not an acceptable answer.
I probably think United, actually. I think Mourinho has finally assembled. It's such a big, strong side, and he's got all the elements now, and I think he's already sorted out the defence last season, and with Lukaku, possibly Zlatan coming in as well later. I think they've got enough, but can they win it? No, I don't think so. I don't think any English club can. And Conte's Champions League performances with Juventus weren't that great. So can Chelsea go far with this squad? I don't think so either. And City, I think they're too open on the European scene. I mean, he's sorted out some things, but the midfield is still full of holes. And even said they were so impressive.
Johnny Evans arrives.
true, there is that. Then I might revise my predictions for the Champions League. but I think United for the time being.
Everyone go with that?
Well, that, it does depend on the draw. I'm sorry. because if they do get two big teams, that's the question that remains over United this season. How are they going to approach playing against two big teams? Can they actually beat two big teams to finish above them in the group? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what Mourinho decides to do.
Chris
Mills won't be enough.
Chris says, is seeding in sport, Champions League draw, tennis tournaments a good thing? Isn't there just something magical about an open draw? I mean, I would, if I was in charge of UEFA, which is unlikely, I would change the Champions League to not even two legs, like the FA Cup. First round, Real Madrid, Manchester United, off you go. 90 minutes.
That'd be great. Bit like the old time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure the sponsors would absolutely love that.
I've heard Gazprom, it's what they want.
Yeah.
I believe so. Elsewhere in Europe, a big night for Östersunds, if I've pronounced that correctly.
Yeah.
Of the Swedish Allsvenskan.
Very good.
I'm going to come to you on this one, Marcus.
Okay, thanks.
It's okay.
Yeah, they took the lead, I believe, away, but they lost 3-1 against PAOK in the end. And it was a real shame because they beat Galatasaray in the second qualifying round, which is just absolutely astonishing from this side, which managed by an Englishman, Graham Potter, who has just revolutionised the whole city and the club, taking them from the fourth tier into Europe. It's absolutely unbelievable.
Who he then, Mr. Potter?
I don't know exactly his background, I must admit. He played, but then took his badges and so on and was picked up by Östersund's owner, who is a bit left field and likes to make these decisions.
Because whenever you hear of these stories of teams coming up from the fourth division anywhere, somewhere in the background, the dream is lost because they've got a billionaire there. Or is this not the case?
No, it's not in the same way as you get stories over here. It's not on the same scale. It's just an extremely well-run club, and Potter has had some extraordinary ideas. He's got his players, you might have heard of this, performing Swan Lake on stage in front of others. And he had this experiment where he asked people how privileged they were, and they answered yes and no to questions, and some ended up at the front of the room staring to the wall because they were, I can't remember, either so privileged or not privileged, and some at the back, and they looked at their teammates and realized we come from completely different backgrounds. So absolutely fascinating.
He's English.
Yes, okay. No, exactly. So that's why he didn't get a job over here, so he had to go abroad. And I hope he comes back and gets...
What was the Swan Lake theory? It was just a team-building exercise? Was it as simple as that, or was there more to... Was it all with a warm-up combined?
No. It was a team-building exercise, and in a way to take them out of the comfort zone, I think, was the main idea of it.
Was it a sellout, do we know? Did it go down well?
I'm pretty sure, yes.
Bound together by a sense of...
Who do you think would be the... I think I remember that Wimbledon, the crazy gang, did something similar.
Did they?
Yes, I think I remember pictures of Robbie Earle with a ballerina or a ballet dancer from Covent Garden. And
that wasn't just in Heat magazine, was
that
it?
That was, no, and all the players falling, falling apart, I was going to say, but just laughing their heads off. It was an experiment as well, but I think it was meant with a little bit of salt, a pinch of salt. This sounds much more like the sort of idea, for example, Jürgen Klinsmann would come up with.
Yes, exactly.
I think I remember George Best made some disparaging remarks about ballerinas back when he was a player in his prime, and one of the leading ballerinas at the time, might have been Nureyev, I don't know, challenged him to come train with him for a day to do the warm-ups. And at the end, Best was stiff in places he had never been stiff before. Because it was such a strenuous workout.
Graham Potter last played for Macclesfield. That's not from my brain, to point out. I love the idea. I mean, ballet as a warm-up would be great. I mean, bring it into the Premier League. I would enforce that.
Sunderland should have organised that, because didn't they used to come on the pitch to the strands of...
Prokofiev,
absolutely. Yeah. So they could have done that. Yeah, and I suppose we've also got some Tchaikovsky when the Champions League is on. So I think we've got an idea here, guys. There is something happening.
In another draw, did anybody get up early this morning at 4:30 to see the third round draw of the Carabao Cup live, not televised anywhere, from Beijing, 20 minutes late, to see where Burton would go in the third round of the Carabao Cup?
Sadly not. I set my alarm, but I didn't hear it, so I slept through.
Oh, are you okay?
Yeah, I've just recovered.
Does anybody think this is... Does anyone frantically upset that this is when the draw is happening to one of our three main pieces of silverware?
I suppose that anyone who does object to it, and I'm not among them, I don't care that much about it, but anyone who does object would feel maybe it's a precursor to actual matches being moved overseas.
So look, Burton won at Cardiff, they go to Manchester United. Wolves won at Southampton, they host Bristol Rovers, who won at Fulham. Nottingham Forest won at Newcastle, more pressure on Rafa, they go to Chelsea. Bristol City won at Watford, they play Stoke. And it's a cup final for Barnsley or Derby at Wembley as they go to Spurs. That is the end of part one. Part two, coming up shortly, is entitled Wayne Rooney and some Man City Everton related things. Welcome back to part two. Let's talk about Wayne Rooney, gentlemen. I've picked out two quotes. Gary Lineker said, "England's highest ever goal scorer calls it a day. Congratulations at Wayne Rooney on a magnificent international career. A player's player." Dean Ashton said, "Players retiring themselves, though, if they knew what being forced to retire was like, they would never utter the word #Rooney. I thought Lineker's tweet is interesting because it does seem to divide between ex-pros saying this guy's the best thing that's ever been and journalists saying, well, he was all right. Where do you stand, Marcus?
I think he's been superb. I've got a lot of admiration for him because I think he's extremely hardworking. He has been prolific for a large part of his career, not only for England but for his club as well. And he's a bit older now, and his body is maybe not holding up, but a fantastic player. And it's easy to forget because he's been around for so long how good he was in those early years as well. And maybe he didn't have an impact on a major tournament that we would have liked him to, but overall a superb player, and it feels harsh to criticise him when there's been others who have not come near his standard.
The main reason he never had an impact on a major tournament, apart from the first one obviously when he was exceptional, was unfortunate injuries, which he didn't have many injuries throughout his career, but they always seemed to be just before a major tournament. And if I've understood that Dean Ashton quote you read out properly, he's suggesting his retirement was premature. But I think the reason he's retired from international football is precisely to prolong his career, isn't it?
We said on other pods, and I don't know if it's a trick of the eye, but if he just looks fitter and thinner and healthier and happier and everything now. And people were talking about him potentially getting back into the squad, and Southgate wants him.
Damning on someone, isn't it? I mean, it's either damning on him, why weren't you in that shape in the last couple of years at United? Or it's damning on someone in the Manchester area who had him in such a state of mind that he wasn't able to get into that shape.
It's also possible, you know, to, like, musician who's been in the band for too long and he changes bands and suddenly he gets his chops back again and some inspiration. He's back in the club that he's always supported. He's surrounded with young Scousers, plenty of them.
Are you thinking when Phil Collins went to Genesis?
Don't talk about Phil Collins. His name is anathema. I won't have it pronounced again. But it's interesting, you've got an Irishman, a Swede and a Frenchman who would all agree to say he's been a great player. And I think the problem is in his own country, because outside of England, people have absolutely, I mean, no doubt that we are talking about a truly great player.
I wonder,
and a team player, one of the very last team players, whose record for England is exceptional. And I think that people who discuss that, I don't know what they're watching, honestly. They also miss out on the qualities that make Rooney Rooney. And I think part of the problem is the fact that he was so amazing in 2004, and we all agree he was amazing, and he was not capable of doing with England what Maradona did with Naples or with Argentina. And I think people had such high hopes, they were hoping he would be the talisman, he would be the guy who would, this young guy would take this golden generation and transform them into world beaters, which they were not.
Do you think
he's been as good as he could possibly be. He's always said, yes, I'm available. When he could have chosen some competitions, I think, to say, sorry, guys, but I don't think I can make this one because I'm going to look like a like a donkey, basically, which he did in a couple of tournaments.
I wonder if the narrative would be different if it had happened in reverse, you know,
yeah,
and 2004 was last year and he'd finished with such a great tournament. He may not have gotten the squad.
And you could say that Euro 2016 was a tournament too far for him, possibly. Also... Definitely. That now there are so many young English players coming through, as we've seen during the summer, with, you know, doing so well with the youth teams in big competitions, that it's time for him to go. And he's realized that and he said, okay, I'm not going to be disrupting things any longer. So it's amazing how much love there is for him outside of England and how people are quick to fall on him in this country. Some of it I found a little bit distasteful, I must say.
Do you think that could ever change?
Come back, you mean?
No, not with Rooney, just the way England fans view England footballers.
I do hope so, and I do hope so. I don't know if that's going to be the case, because Rooney, again, and perhaps one of the things that we love the most in him, and I'm saying again abroad, is the fact that in an age where you have players who seem to be entirely focused on their individual career, Rooney, of course, he's focused on individual career, tries to make money and blah, blah, deals and so forth. But he's always been a team player.
Do you think...
And that's worked against him, which is very sad.
You mentioned it's interesting that, you know, an Irishman, a Swede and a Frenchman
all
say he's great. Do you judge your own players in the way you judge Rooney, or do you judge them like England fans judge England players?
Interesting question, which I will need some time to think about this one.
I could answer from an Irish point of view, which they're probably not comparable because Ireland is a much smaller country than England. But in England, it seems that the players are always measured against the best in the world, whereas we measure our players against the best in our country. So if a guy has limitations but he's better than anyone else, any other Irish player, then you're happy for him to come and do his best and you accept his limitations. Whereas I'm thinking that's why people like Kevin Kilvan are sort of legends of Irish football, even though no one ever thought that he was the greatest left midfielder in the world.
Where do you stand on Shay Given? Because another Irishman who occasionally occupies this pod is, he was criticised, Shay Given, to such a degree that an Irish radio station did a phone-in on him criticising Shay Given.
Yeah, I know the guy you're talking about.
Yeah.
And, Shay Given was the best Irish keeper at that time. So, bearing in mind what I just said previously, he deserved most of his selections.
And Marcus Sweden, how are the Swedes?
I think similar to Ireland. I just think they're all kind of very, very good footballers at this level, and it's a bit stupid for us almost to sit and say, oh, they're rubbish and so on. I find most of them, but you can't compare it to English players as well. There's a different level of pressure. But we've had Zlatan, we've had Freddie Ljungberg, and we've had Henrik Larsson, and they are world stars, but that doesn't mean that we look down on other players who are not as good as them.
And I would say that the difference with France is the fact that France has won quite a few tournaments.
Good point.
It's a reminder. So you judge our players quite differently. The problem we have now is that we will always judge the players compared to either the Platini generation of 1982, or we will compare them to the Zidane generation of 98 and 2000. And then, therefore, it's even like, you know, beaten in the Euro final, that was a real disappointment. You know, it's a different context, shall we say. But I can think of one player who, in a way, was treated the same way as Wayne Rooney when he stopped with France, and it's Thierry Henry. But for very different reasons. But he's the only one I can think, a player of that magnitude, and a world champion, and a European champion. So with an honors list, which is remarkable. But there was that ambivalence towards him, but for different reasons, I think.
Well, Rooney did score at the Etihad. I want to talk about that game. A few things came out of it. There were two sendings off. Kyle Walker. Were they both yellow cards? Yes or no, Paul?
I didn't see the match, and I didn't see Schneiderlin's cards. I saw the Walker incident, and
with Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah, and obviously, the second one wasn't a booking. So,
because no. I got a lot of stick from Everton fans for saying it wasn't a booking, and they've slowed it down so much. So Walker does catch him in the face.
Yeah, he does.
So, do you think that is a yellow?
That's what I felt at the moment, and I think that we shouldn't have a debate about it because the decision was taken, and it looked at the time like a perfectly reasonable decision to the people who were neutral, that is, in the stadium. I've talked to a few of my friends who were at the game and who said from where they were sitting they genuinely thought, A, it was one of the stupidest thing to do for a player who's just received the yellow card to turn around in front of the referee. The ref can see that he's... okay, I'm going to take care of that guy. And then to whack into him to do an obstruction, basically, which in itself is not a yellow card offence, okay? But doing with such energy. And at the moment, and I felt, he's hit him in the head. No doubt about that. The Schneiderlin one is really interesting because it depends whether people have read the laws or not. Because the contact, as they say, is minimal, if there is any contact. On the other hand, it is a dangerous tackle. And and Aguero is rolling on the floor.
Could there be, because the panel, there is a panel, the FA has
and
powers.
And again, it was stupid.
Yeah, the FA has powers that permit it to punish divers and cheaters retrospectively with two match bans, subject to their attempts to con referees being exposed by video replays to the satisfaction of a panel of experts. But neither of these incidents was clear-cut enough.
No.
But Aguero is kicked on his right foot, I think, and spins round and holds his left thigh, I think it is. So clearly...
He's trying to get the maximum advantage out of a situation which he hasn't provoked himself. So that's a bit of a... It's a bizarre one, because the Schneiderlin tackle is not controlled, potentially dangerous, and a foul... In the laws of football, it's not contact is not needed for fouls. Okay, it's the intent which is taken into account by the referees, and it looked really, really bad. And yes, Aguero's reaction made it look even worse than it was.
Could you book Aguero as well?
It's probably a bit harsh. I think you go around booking players. And I do find, especially when someone has been tripped in the penalty area, it looks like they've taken a dive. And so they not only don't get the penalty, and then they're booked. I mean, it's pretty harsh.
Just because you were kicked on your right shin, it doesn't mean you can't hurt your left thigh as you fall.
Well, that's true.
Have you gone down clutching your left thigh and being hit?
No.
Anybody who's played football at any level, when you see a guy coming towards you with the clear intent of taking you down, chopping you, you take evasive action, and when the tackle comes, you will automatically, try to jump out of the way or try to protect yourself. And it might look like a dive. It's actually protection.
Jack Wilshere, for example, this week. Kind of took evasive action, or he was falling before he was shunted, and then he took retaliatory action for which he was very harshly sent off. I thought that was very harsh because
the tackle was absolutely disgraceful. Yeah. That was, especially in a player whom, in a reserve game, a player who was coming back from an ankle injury, that was absolutely awful. What the City played.
And actually, Wilshere pushed, I think he's called Matt Smith, and edit that out if I'm wrong, from Man City's under 23s. He pushes him in the chest and he goes down holding his face.
Yeah. So that is...
That's the Rivaldo.
That's the Rivaldo.
Okay.
Okay. And that is... Yes.
So we can ban him.
Yes.
Yeah. And rescind Wilshere's card. Yeah. Okay. All he was doing was demonstrating his desire to stay fit. That he should be applauded.
Below the line, Football Fan of Vermont said, do you think players such as Morgan Schneiderlin will soon start signalling for VAR, tracing a rectangle in the air with his fingers when unjustly penalised or denied a perfectly good goal? It seems like it might be a creative, passive-aggressive technique to make a point, or will players continue to prefer to just swear at a match official?
You can do both, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, you can. Sane did two foul throws in this game. Nothing I love more is people paid 150,000 a week, whatever, who can't do a throw-in. What should a punishment be for someone who can't do a throw? Or do you think we should get rid of throws and just roll it in? Keeps the pace of the game. It's a very hard skill to volley it or head it back to a thrower.
Uh-huh. And which is good.
I think it was Graham Taylor. Mm-hmm. I think Paul Merson tells this. Was obsessed with throw-ins as the team without the ball, because it meant for a very short period, i.e. a second, you had 11 men and they had 10. But I wondered
about...
Well,
the ball
was
out of play.
That's also a good point.
That's a very Charles Reap sort of notion.
It's a minor detail. Yeah. But I don't know. I love the foul throw. I just wanted to mention it. But do you think there's any thought of, if you roll it in, or in hockey you can take it to yourself and just... Yes. Speed up the game.
Taking it to yourself, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also think it should be like take free kicks to yourself. Very much.
That's going to come for the free kick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the board is looking at it quite closely. Mm-hmm. And why not a corner kick to yourself?
Okay.
But that's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun. It just adds something to the game. But no, a throw. Bloody hell. It's I can't believe
the throw.
keep your dirty paws off the throw-in.
So what should happen to someone who can't do a throw-in? I mean, he should be sin-binned.
Fine him.
It would solve a problem. Just drop him for this weekend and get Bernardo Silva into the team. Yeah. It's a crime that he's not playing from the start.
Correct. How long did he play for? Like 5 minutes? He looked amazing, didn't he?
He's an amazing player.
I didn't see that game, but I saw him last season.
He's been an amazing player at least for two seasons, I would say.
Yeah. Did anyone like the Tunnel Club? Look, you're shaking your head, Philippe. Marina Hyde wrote, you have to marvel at the Premier League's endless, restless search for the definitive piece of twattery. Ram says, a Man City build a Tunnel Club aquarium and ref hands out two dubious red cards. Coincidence or conspiracy to increase tunnel football?
If I'm not mistaken, it will be the same thing at White Hart Lane 2-0, isn't it? Yep. So another income stream, revenue stream, which is a bit of a problem for us journalists. It's yet another place that we could sometimes sneak in, and we can't anymore. Basically, that's what it also means. I think one of our colleagues, I think it's Tom Williams, found himself in the tunnel and was expelled, and was told in no uncertain terms that his place was not there, that he was basically ruining the experience of the people who'd paid a lot of money for that. Absolutely unbelievable, isn't it? Yeah.
Just
Is this the end of football?
I wish this was filmed, because Paul's face tells a thousand stories.
It'll be the end of a thousand stories, because there's lots of great stories of bust-ups in the tunnel, and now if they're going to have to be on their best behaviour.
But do you think they'll forget? I mean, footballers will forget, won't they, eventually? Eventually, every tunnel will be like that, and then they'll forget.
Well, and in which case, then, paying 15 grand, sometimes you might get value for money.
Speaking of the tunnel...
which means as well that the media will have to pay as well to have people who are in that zone to know what exactly is happening.
The old Arsenal team used to... have this phrase. They used to say to the players on the pitch, if it had been a rough game and they all wanted to be in the tunnel for the opposition, they'd shout, "Put the kettle on." So all the players would hear, "Put the kettle on." And that meant when the whistle went, they would sprint back to the tunnel and be waiting for whoever.
That's what the current Arsenal team need.
Yeah, absolutely. Marcus, apparently you have
A nice cup of tea. Yeah.
Marcus, apparently you have a minute on Swedish football, I'm told.
Yes, thank you very much. Can we make that 30 seconds?
Yeah, of course.
The Östersund element, and Potter was one of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, exactly. So perhaps less excitingly, I was going to speak a bit about the Swedish league, Allsvenskan, which is dominated by Malmö yet again. New coach Magnus Persson has done all right, but they went out to the Champions League. They're 10 points ahead now of Djurgården. So they win it, but Djurgården, I think, is worth mentioning here. They are now, their midfield is run by one Kim Källström, who is an absolute favourite of mine, has been throughout the career. Brilliant. Arsenal fans may remember him for a rather short and unfortunate spell here, which wasn't his fault, really. God knows why Arsenal brought him in. He scored a penalty, didn't he? At least in the semi-final of the FA Cup, but he's still going well, and his passing is still superb. So they're the top two in Allsvenskan. But then also there's some more match fixing. The Swedish betting company Svenska Spel has suspended all games for a first division side, Norrby, who lost 3-0 against Dalkurd the other week. And it's tricky. There was a lot of suspicious betting and in Europe and in Asia. But as the club chairman of Norrby said, I mean, we conceded 3 goals. I think you have to do a bit more to have these accusations against you. And it's got a fair point. And I don't know what's been going on. And I don't know the complete background. But 1-3-0 defeat, a bit of suspicious betting, and suddenly the whole club is kind of on their radar, and the suspicions against the players and so on. So interesting. Not a great story to report from Sweden, perhaps, but that's what's going on.
Well, I enjoyed that Swedish 30 seconds so much that we're now going to do the Gillette World of Football feature featuring Sweden. And we're not just trying to get all the juice out of you that we can, Marcus. This was a piece actually done in the summer, but it's great. And if people don't know it, it's a cup called, and please correct me on this, Ekstjors Cup?
Yeah, Kör Cup.
Ekstjors Cup, yeah. In Örebro County in Sweden.
Yeah.
I don't know if either of you know this one. In each tie, the lower-ranked team receives the same number of bonus penalty kicks as the number of league divisions they are below their opponents. Okay, so if you're in the fourth division and you play the second division, you get 2 penalties. You can choose to take your penalties before the match or directly before the second half. The penalty can be taken by one or multiple players. Depending on the draw, a maximum of 9 penalties can be taken, but a maximum of 3 count. Okay, so you can score a hat-trick before the game has even started. This is a wonderful competition, Marcus.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Brilliant.
And it's gone down well, and it's why not? I mean,
it's an absolutely brilliant idea. It's handicap. That's all there is. It exists in other sports. Why not?
Exactly, because if there are 8 or 9 divisions apart, what's almost the point of turning up and stuff? But if at least you have a 3-0 lead, you can go into it. It's exciting. Or you go 2-0 down and you think, well, we've got 3 penalties at halftime.
How would you tactically play it, Paul? Would you park the bus for 45, see how you were? Or would you take your 9 penalties and hope you get 3 in? Yeah. What if you didn't score
any? I'm wondering, have there been any cases of a team missing all their penalties? All 9 penalties.
That was heartbreaking time, wouldn't it?
Because these are presumably pretty bad teams.
And Marcus, is this just a local cup? I mean, how big is this thing?
It's a county cup. So it's not big. It's not like the Swedish Cup or the FA Cup here. But it is very interesting. I haven't heard whether there are any calls to be introduced in the main competition. I think it'd be difficult when you've got European place at stake and so on. But it's a wonderful idea.
That is the end. I got this Philippe sort of whispering. What a one. Sorry. All day you'll be thinking about this.
I think I'd never thought of anything like that. I think that makes complete sense to me. It makes complete sense.
That's the Swedes for you, Philippe.
Yeah.
That's the end of part two. In part three, we'll find out about Davinson Sanchez, Spurs' record signing, £42 million. Look ahead to the Premier League weekend and take some of your questions. Welcome back to part three. The Premier League is back. Some exciting games and some not very exciting games. But generally, it's actually started really well, the Premier League, don't you think?
Yes, it's been very exciting and quite thrilling, and there's been some to an extent it's been the Premier League as we know it, with some very flawed teams providing a lot of entertainment, but there's been also been teams who aren't at all flawed, Huddersfield being the obvious example, who are the epitome of a well-run club and just going from strength to strength, apparently.
They play Southampton, Huddersfield. So it could be three from three, couldn't it? West, yep. Brom as well. They play Stoke. So,
one for the purists,
isn't it? Will you be going to? You'll be watching that one, Philip.
I'll be at a game which I think is the game of the weekend, which is Chelsea Everton. I think people will say Liverpool Arsenal is a bit, you know, on paper, but the most interesting, I think, the best game is probably going to be Chelsea Everton.
Why do you say that?
Because I'm extremely impressed with Everton since the beginning of the season. I still have questions about Chelsea. I was at the game against Spurs, and I thought this was a remarkable performance by a team which is flawed, talking about Chelsea, but a remarkable performance. I'm not sure they can actually have performances like this every week. I actually don't think so.
And actually, we mentioned Calvert-Lewin, and he was brilliant at Man City, wasn't he?
Incredible.
I just didn't realise he was that good at football.
Well, I think it's a bit of a revelation, because he was wonderful during the summer with England. He was truly excellent. But to do this against a team of the magnitude of Manchester City. The only problem is, I think David Klaassen looks like he might be out. Mm. And also Sandro, but Sandro is not wouldn't be a great loss, but Klaassen would be. But I'm expecting Everton to do something at Chelsea and to continue proving that they are genuine contenders for the top four, which I think for them entirely depending on how they started the season, given their pretty atrocious schedule. I mean, it's absolutely. I mean, the computer was really tough on them, and so far they've managed to juggle European duties and we're talking before the event here, but European duties and the league recruitment has been good. Rooney is in top form. The new players have gelled in almost immediately. There's a really lovely blend of experience and youth, and they've got a lot of arguments to create trouble at Stamford Bridge, which, yeah, I think is that's the game I'll be at. I'm really, yeah, looking forward to this.
And they play Haddock Splits tonight, the second leg of the Europa League. Liverpool Arsenal, which will not be as exciting as Chelsea Everton. Marcus?
I think it might be, actually. I'm really looking forward to that one, because anything can happen. I mean, like someone said,
even
last
nil
night,
nil when everybody's expecting 5-4.
Nil-nil will not happen. It's just, it's amazing. So Arsenal's three-man defence, which they've obviously done for 10 games or now something, but will they cope with the forwards and Xhaka and whoever plays with him? Is it Ramsey in the central midfield?
Because Kostelny's back, isn't he? That's a huge, I mean, that will make a huge difference.
And yeah. Sanchez, back
Sanchez
well,
should apparently. Start, yeah. Exactly. And he was obviously dropped after a bust-up the last time they played at Anfield, so it should be a cracking game. I can't wait.
And Manchester United home to Leicester. They don't play anyone, I think they don't play anyone who finished in the top six until October, I think. So the fixture list
is
not...
The only one is Everton they're playing in not too long, but they were, of course, seventh. So, nobody from the top six.
You've zipped up your bag, Philippe.
Yes, because I'm afraid that I can hear the call of the Black Forest and of cars racing down between the trees, and they need me.
They need you.
They need me.
We also need you, Philippe, but we understand.
Yes, I'm terribly sorry about it. So I've zipped my bag, but Philippe, I will have to pay my respects, and thank you very much for having me.
Total pleasure. Philippe zips up his white Hessian rucksack.
Yes.
And he will.
I put on my Tyrolean hat, and my Alpenstock, and off I go.
And off you go. Cheers, Philippe.
Thank you, life.
Any other games, gentlemen, from the Premier League that stick out to you?
I'm mildly interested in Watford against Brighton.
Oh, that's good.
Because I thought. You know, Watford have made a decent start to the season, and then they went and lost at home in the League Cup during the week to Bristol City. And Jose Holobas got sent off to compound matters because he's the only left back at the club. So I think I know which wing Chris Hughton is going to deploy his new record signing winger on this weekend.
That Izquierdo?
Yeah. So that could be interesting.
And that's good because below the line, Scorned Hornet wrote, brilliant, Watford play Liverpool and all we get is that big bloke up top scored. And after a 10-minute rant on Liverpool's defensive failings, this week we stuff the media darlings, Bournemouth, and not even a mention that the game existed. So thank you, Paul, for independently bringing up Watford's. How about you, Marcus?
Well, two ties probably. Palace-Swansea should be interesting, and Frank de Boer's tricky start in the league, shall we say, against Paul Clement, who's also had a very tricky start. So whoever loses that one will be under that more scrutiny after that. And Newcastle, obviously.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Go for it.
I just thought someone should do it now that James Richardson's not here. No, I was just going to say that Swansea are a good example because I've heard a lot of people scoff at the notion of somebody trying to introduce an Ajax type of style at Crystal Palace as if, oh, this is Crystal Palace, how could they ever play like Ajax? But of course people would have scoffed at the notion of Swansea ticky-tacking their way to the top flight 10 years ago, or indeed of Huddersfield doing a Borussia Dortmund inspired rise. So it is at least in theory possible for Crystal Palace to adopt a new style. I don't think Frank de Boer will successfully do it, but it's not an outrageous concept.
No, I agree. And Newcastle, obviously, they badly need a win against West Ham.
And West Ham badly need a win against Newcastle.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it should be good. Spurs play Burnley at Wembley, and they have just signed Davinson Sanchez for £42 million. And at the end of part two, I said, we're going to find out more about Davinson Sanchez. And Marcus said, who's going to tell us about that? We have Priya Ramesh, who writes about Dutch football, to do exactly that. Priya, thanks very much for joining us. Tell us all about Davinson Sanchez. Who is he? How good is he? Is he worth £42 million?
He's a Colombian defender, signed for Ajax last season from Atlético Nacional back in Colombia. He actually won the Copa Libertadores with them that summer and then moved to Ajax. And, you know, within the season reached the final of another major competition in the continent. Played centre-back for Ajax, obviously. He's been signed as a centre-back, which is a bit odd considering that's not really the position Spurs might want to be prioritising. But, yeah, he's actually only been a centre-back for 3 years. I think he was a midfielder in Colombia and then Juan Carlos Osorio, who's currently the Mexican coach, if I'm not wrong, he told him that his pace combined with his physique probably meant that he had a really bright future in defence. So that's where he's been playing. In terms of whether he's worth £42 million, personally, I'm taking it to be I'm taking £20 million off that fee and treating it as the excess that Spurs owe Ajax for Christian Eriksen. it was absolutely ridiculous that they managed to sign him for it. It's the one thing that I can never, and I will never let go of as long as I watch football, because it is ridiculous to me that they only paid £11 million for Christian Eriksen. But yeah, I mean, the fee probably says more about the transfer market than necessarily Sanchez's quality. Because obviously when you sign a defender who's just turned 21, you are paying a lot for the potential as well. You're not paying for what he is at the moment because he's not yet a finished article. But it'll be interesting because I personally think the move kind of precipitates possibly a more permanent shift towards three at the back for Spurs. You know, you could see Sanchez playing down the middle and Alderweireld on the right and Strong on the left. Or you could switch him with Alderweireld as well and him playing on the right. You know, Pochettino might want to consider Dier more permanently as a midfielder, and Sanchez coming in kind of facilitates that. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. I think he is kind of ready for English football in a way, but he's still very raw. So, you know, he had a great season at Ajax. He finished as the player of the year. But he does have flaws in his game, and it can be exposed, can be turned a bit quickly at times. So, I'm just hoping Pochettino can, you know, work his magic. And you know, the other two ex-Ajax defenders in that back line could lend him some sort of support as well.
How much did people who follow the Dutch league look at the players who've come into the Premier League and sort of judge how good their league is that way? I mean, I think of players that, you know, Vincent Janssen especially, people who do well in the Dutch league who haven't turned on, or did they not really care? Once they've gone, they've gone.
I think people do care because it is a reflection of the league. And, you know, it does come with the reputation that the Eredivisie signings can't be trusted. I mean, yeah, just because you see like the highs of someone like Luis Suarez, and then you see someone like, you know, Afonso Alves in the olden days, but you know, more recently Vincent Janssen, or even, you know, Ricky van Volswinkel. So it is a bit hard to predict how they'll do, but I think that applies to most leagues. And it was interesting because over the summer I was thinking about it, and three of possibly the top five defenders in the Premier League now, you know, played in the Eredivisie at one point. So it doesn't reflect too badly on the league. And you know, we've noticed in general the trend is that defenders tend to take to the Premier League a bit better than attackers, which is odd considering these are the defenders that the attackers face in the Eredivisie. So it's very hard to kind of put a definitive label on how an Eredivisie signing is going to pan out in the Premier League. The Eredivisie doesn't have a shining reputation at the moment, so one of the only good things it's known for now is the fact that it produces a lot of talent.
Thanks so much for coming on, Priya, and thank you especially for mentioning Ricky van Volswinkel, who's not mentioned enough on this podcast. Priya Romesh there, writer about Dutch football. Mark's written, could Tottenham be on a path to a Mourinho season, i.e. dropping out of the top six, Wembley, Champions League strain, Poch found out, little depth, Paul?
It's possible. Again, it remains to be seen in terms of the depth, what they do over the next week or so. Poch found out, I think it's more a case of Poch being held back by lack of investment so far. He's pretty much achieved as much as you could expect, I would suggest. I do hope they strengthen in offensively as well as defensively. I think that's where it's needed more. I think they often don't need to play with the two defensive midfielders, Dier and Dembele, in there. I'd like to see more options. But yeah, I think they won't fall outside the top six. Is that what he said? I think they'll be in the top six, all right.
Oh, well, I mean, the Mourinho season is 10th, isn't it? That's what happens. Peter says, why have there been so many red cards in the first two games of the season? I came up with a seven-a-side team of sendings off with Walker and Cahill in defence, Schneiderlin holding, Shelvey and Fabregas, Arnautovic up top, and Robson Kanu in goal, because no one's been sent off. Is that just because referees have to use new laws right at the start of the season and they forget? That's what everyone says, isn't it?
I'm trying to remember what the red cards were for. The Shelvey one was, I mean, only he knows.
Yeah, and Fabregas as well. Yeah. And Arnautovic
as well. I think players will settle down once the transfer window. Let's blame it all on the transfer window. Once players have settled down, they're less nervous about moving clubs and so on. They will stop doing silly things.
And the final question is from Fred the Leopard, who says, and it's a difficult one, so if you can't think of one, it doesn't matter, but they can write below the line their thoughts. What are the panel's all-time favourite fouls? He says mine is Keown on Alan Smith, almost kicks him off the pitch, only to claim he got the ball.
Benjamin Massing springs to mind. You remember on Claudio Caniggia and the 1990 World Cup?
When Caniggia lost a boot, did he?
Two almost fatal tackles. And then Massing made sure he didn't hurdle the third. That was special. This one wasn't a foul so much as I still have fond memories of, I think it was David Speedy on a Sunderland defender, Gary Bennett, who had been out with a knee injury for a while. And and Speedy went for his knee over in a touchline skirmish in a what looked like a very nasty foul, and Bennett picked him up and threw him over the advertising hoarding and held him by the neck on the seat, on a vacant seat that was there, as the people sitting beside were looking. Oh, that was wonderful.
Oh, that's great. You wouldn't get that in the Tunnel Club, no, would you? Do you want to add to that, Marcus, or are you happy?
No, Massing is superb. There's even a brick-by-brick video on The Guardian when we used to do them on Massings. And then there's a Cantona one where, I mean, the other guy could have died, so it's probably not that funny. But I think he hits him in the midriff or something with a high boot, and he comes flying through the scene. It's like a Bruce Lee film scene. It's worth having a look.
Right. Roy Keane and Mark Overmars is one that's remembered with great affection in Ireland.
Maybe not in the Netherlands.
Right, well, thanks for your time, chaps. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you.
We'll be back on Monday.
Hi there, it's Max here. I hope you're enjoying the pod. I finished recording about 2 hours ago. It's been brought to my attention in that time that Graham Kelly is still with us, and I'd like to apologise to him and anyone else who was offended. There we are. Thanks.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.